Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, January 22nd, welcome on into the program, friends. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Afi Wolfman, Aaron. Today on the show, we're talking about America and Pennsylvania's aging population. And we've touched on this topic before, but we wanted to take a different approach today. We wanted to look at how society could or should be reoriented to account for the fact that a growing segment of the population is 65 and older, or 60 and older, wherever you put that cutoff point. Here in Pennsylvania, we're in the middle of a transformation. You might not feel it right now, but we really are. We're in this sort of like really steep part of the curve where the percentage of Pennsylvanians over 60 is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. By 2030, it'll start to even out, but by then it'll be about 30% of Pennsylvanians. So how should transit look different? How should housing look different? How should all facets of society, healthcare, look different because of this change? We're asking you the following question this hour. How do you think we should be reimagining society for seniors? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
Yeah, and this is a conversation that people are having, especially if your parents are getting to that age. You're probably thinking about this if you're getting to that age. And the thing is, we want our seniors around, right? And people are living a lot longer. And so you got to accommodate that. We'd love to hear your thoughts. How do you think we should be reimagining society for seniors? 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And because it's Thursday, Avi, it's DJ of the day.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We always end our Thursday show with a song picked by one of you that's related to the theme of that day's show. You send your submissions in to EP Kevin. He picks one lucky winner. So submit a song that has to do with today's topic, demographics, aging. I don't know. What else?
Forever young, maybe. Okay. Aging well.
There's literally a song
long
called
life.
That.
Yeah. But I mean, did I just give him forever young?
Maybe don't do that. Literally the song
don't
forever
do that,
young.
Y'all.
But, you know.
Get creative.
Yeah. Get a little more creative than that. But it's EP Kevin's decision. It's not ours. Mm-hmm. Get your submissions in by 12:30. Studio2@whyy.org. Or maybe he will pick Forever Young just to troll us.
I know. Yeah.
Go ahead,
you
Kevin.
Know what? If we're trolled, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
It is what
okay.
it is.
Trio of local news stories.
And you're kicking us off.
I'm kicking us off with some breaking news just within the last hour from the School District of Philadelphia. The district announced that it plans to close 20 schools as part of a larger, long-awaited facilities management effort. Those closures, if approved, they are not approved yet, would take effect at the end of the 26-27 school year, so the end of next school year. This is part of a larger plan to merge some schools, co-locate others, and fix up some dilapidated schools. Some important context here. The last time the district closed a large number of schools all at once was 2013, 23 closures that year. That was in response to poor building conditions and declining enrollment. And since 2014-15, those problems have remained. The district's enrollment has plunged another 12%. There are roughly 70,000 empty seats across district school buildings. But in other parts of the city, like the Northeast, there's overcrowding, so clearly an imbalance. However, school closings are controversial. They can be disruptive. And after the 2013 closures, there were efforts to study the impact. And one study suggested that there were some effects on students, especially students at schools that received displaced students. So a lot to consider. But we were waiting for this news about what schools might be closed. And now we have a list of 20.
Yeah. And I'll say people do not like change, but change is definitely needed here. People are attached to their schools, but some of those schools needed major facilities work. You know, and the school district had a facilities problem and they're finally trying to deal with it head on. And under this plan, I understand that every one of the 85 buildings that have been judged poor or unsatisfactory condition will either be closed or upgraded within 10 years. And it's a pretty expensive plan. It's $1.8 billion, but $800 million of that has to be raised or figured out. So a lot could happen, but you know, the plan is out there. And, you know, and one of the things that I read that Superintendent Watlington said that this is really about efficiency, because you mentioned that there are a lot of empty seats And so, you know, that's inefficient to have a building with a ton of empty seats. He also said it's about equity because part of the problem is that there's so much disparity. You have really great schools with great facilities, and then you have other students in schools with very poor facilities. And hopefully if they redo this and get this plan comes to fruition, or some plan comes to fruition, there will be equity across the district.
If passed as prologue, 20 schools will not close at the end of this process. Mm-hmm. Typically, when these things happen, they put a lot of schools on the list and then they scale it back based partly on, you know, squeaky wheels, right? Based partly on how people react. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see what the reaction is within local communities. The district's enrollment has been declining for a very long time. There was sort of a big drop in the back half of the 20th century. You might call that the white flight drop. Then in the late 90s, they introduced charter schools. That caused another big drop. So not fewer students overall, but fewer students at schools run by the district. And then that tail of that shift is kind of still happening. So, look, it's an ongoing issue, and it's a very painful issue for lots of people in these school buildings. And we'll be watching it very closely. Another story. Story number two, Cherry, that has to do with a closure and perhaps a revitalization. I'll let you take it away.
Crozier, Chester Medical Center, has a new owner, and they want to restore medical and emergency services at the recently closed Delco Hospital campus. The new owner is a company called Chariot Equities, and they purchased the 64-acre campus in Upland for $10 million. Their partner is a company called Allaire Health Services. They're based in New Jersey, and they operate nursing homes. Chariot is a for-profit company, and they said that within 6 months, they want to have an agreement in place with the healthcare system that would right-size the hospital and the emergency department. And their goal is to reopen this 400-bed hospital in phases. And they want phase one to be, you know, up and going in 2 years. But they have a lot of work to do, Avi, because the buildings had suffered years of neglect under the previous two owners. And Chariot hasn't said whether or not they will refurbish the facilities or how much that reopening will cost. I understand that the buildings have been stripped of the machinery, the medical devices that needed to run the hospital, and it could cost a lot of money to get those facilities up to par. And so, yeah, it's a pretty big deal because before Crozier Chester Medical Center closed last May, this hospital had been the biggest provider of hospital and emergency services in Delaware County, and its absence has left a huge gap in services.
Yeah, so there's hope, but, you know, it's
a lot of questions.
A lot of questions. I think that's a good way to put it. Hope, but lots of questions and a lot of we shall sees there. Story number three, Cherry, another we shall see, but we're going to get resolution on this one far sooner.
Yeah, brace yourself, friends. Snow is coming. Okay. That's according to our weather sources, the iPhone weather app, local meteorologists, and the internet. Yeah. And we're likely to see several inches of snow this weekend. Some say 6 inches, some others say 12, but we will, like you said, Avi.
What do you say?
I say it's probably, you know what? I don't mind a little snow. You know, I don't mind a little snow. I'm going to get cozy and cuddly at home. But Philly Voice did a really cool roundup of some of the most recent snowstorms we've had in the past 30 years. You remember the blizzard of 96?
Sure, yeah.
That was crazy. The city got 30 inches over the course of 3 days. Snowstorm of 09, the city got 23 inches in December of that year. A couple months later, Snowmageddon hit.
Snowmageddon.
In February of 2010, we got 28 inches.
Wow.
And then we got 17 inches of snow in 2016. So this would mark about 10 years since that. And we could get 6 to 12. We'll see.
Right. So the question is, what do you need to do to prepare for a potential blizzard snowstorm here in Philadelphia? What's your sort of Philly snowstorm survival kit?
Well, number one, I need a broken chair or other piece of furniture, because after my husband digs the car out in parking, we need it for savesies.
Oh, you do savesies?
I believe in savesies because of sweat equity. What do you need?
I was thinking more along the line of food and drink.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like... I was like, well, you need that, too.
Yeah.
You need that, too.
So here's what I do. go on Saturday, pick up a whole bunch of barbecue at Mike's Barbecue at 11th and Morris in South Philadelphia, because you can dole that out over time.
Okay.
For drinks, maybe some Yards Winter Lager.
Yeah.
You know, a little local brewery action. And then for an activity, why not bake something with a little Philly flavor? Makes the house smell good, kills the time. You can make some soft pretzels. Try to make your own soft pretzels.
Cookies.
How about a pound cake? Like a stock style pound cake. You could cook that all day.
Yeah.
You kill the time. You have something good to eat. So I've got barbecue, I've got alcohol, and I've got baked goods. I think I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah. See, I was going to bring in popcorn with goobers and chocolate chip cookies because I'm going to do a marathon movie situation.
You're going to watch Philly movies?
No. Favorite movies.
Okay.
And then you got to have, you can't do the cute coat if you decide to go outside. You got to have the coat for the snow.
What?
Yeah, you got to be ready. The coat that really like protects you from the elements.
You're going to go out and buy a coat today?
No, that it's not a cute coat. It's the coat that works, the layers, you know, you got to be ready.
So you have a cute coat and a not cute coat?
Yeah, the coat that just, that can slog through the snow.
I only have one coat. I wonder which kind it is.
Yeah.
Anyways, Studio 2 will be back. Bye. And welcome back, friends, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarit.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Seniors today are not like seniors 50 years ago, thanks to advancements in medicine. Just because you're in your 70s does not mean that you're not sharp and fully capable. And a growing number of people are in that fourth quarter.
Seniors make up nearly a fifth of the population nationwide. Right here in Pennsylvania, residents over 60 are expected to account for a whopping one-third of the population by 2030. Today, we want to talk about the role of our growing silver generation. And to help set the stage, we're joined by health journalist Liz Siegert. Liz has been on the aging beat for over a decade. Liz, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and to our listeners at home, on the road, or elsewhere, we invite you to participate in the conversation. Our question of the day is, how do you think we should reimagine society for seniors? You can call 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, put your comments in the chat. And so, Liz, we wanted to sort of start the conversation by you sort of helping us get the understanding of how big this population of older folks is getting, and then make the case for why we need to plan for this beyond Social Security and Medicare.
Well, how much time do you have? Because
roughly an hour.
There's a lot to say. Believe it or not, the oldest baby boomers are now turning 80 this year. And because people are living longer, that means that everything from healthcare to transportation to housing is going to need a new look. We tend to often dismiss older adults as a marginalized population, but quite frankly, there are many older adults who are still working, who want to work, some that have to work, but many of them feel like they still have a lot to contribute to society, whether it's through paid employment or through volunteering, and want to share their experience with other people in the community.
Yeah.
So there's more people who are older, but also I would imagine that older people today don't have the same preferences as older people 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So how do we see kind of the outlook of people in this demographic group changing, and what are the policy implications of those changing preferences?
Well, for one thing, housing is a big issue. You mentioned the school closures before in the Philadelphia district. What's happening is architects are coming in. They're taking some of those old schools and old office buildings, and they're repurposing them as senior-friendly housing, so that people have access to walkable communities, they have access to services, and that they can live in a community where they can get the help they need. Often, you know, we buy houses, we move to suburbia, and that requires a car, There's often little to no public transportation. So moving people downtown for their later years gives them access to a lot more than they might be living in suburbia, where they could be specifically isolated.
Yeah. I want to sort of talk about the way we viewed aging and the infrastructure around that previously, and how that no longer accommodates this population that we're seeing now.
Well, first of all, I think we have to rethink what it means to grow old. I've heard the term silver tsunami, which is personally just gets my hackles up, because a tsunami indicates a disaster. And this demographic shift is not a disaster. It's just a natural occurrence of what happened during the post-World War II generation. The problem is that we didn't really plan for people to live much beyond 65 or 68 when programs like Medicare and Social Security were introduced. Now people are living well into their 80s and 90s. They're living healthier lives because we have the medical care available to treat them. And the problem with older adults is that they become very marginalized. They're excluded from, community events. They're excluded from the workplace because they're thought to be too old. And I think we really need to reframe that whole cultural aspect. We're starting to see some of it in movies and TV. For example, shows like Grace and Frankie, or a movie like The Thursday Murder Club, where you're seeing older adults be vibrant and lively and active well into older age.
Our question for you this hour, just to repeat it, how do you think we should reimagine society for seniors? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. Aaliyah says, housing has to change. Specifically here in Philadelphia, in-law suites should be standard. Give us some ideas, Liz, for how the housing stock can adapt to these demographic changes.
I think what we need to do is...
And we lost Liz there for a moment, so hopefully we will get her back. I actually think we have another guest already on the line, and we can get local for a minute here. So as we mentioned earlier, right here in Pennsylvania, residents over 60 are expected to account for a whopping one-third of the population by 2030. 2 years ago, Governor Shapiro launched Aging Our Way, a 10-year multi-sector strategic plan to, quote, anticipate and prepare for these demographic trends before they reach their peak. So to help us understand that plan better, let's bring in Jason Kavulich, Pennsylvania Secretary of Aging. Jason, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today and to focus on what is, again, Pennsylvania's fastest growing population, our older adult community.
Yeah. And we read that in just a few years, Pennsylvania, a third of the population will be over age 60. So tell us just, the 30,000 square foot view of what Aging Our Way sort of deals with directly.
Well, what doesn't Aging Our Way deal with is really the better way to ask that question, because Aging Our Way, our 10-year multi-sector plan, really was built by Pennsylvanians for Pennsylvania. So we went out as a department. The governor, under an executive order, ordered us to convene all of our stakeholders, all of our state agencies, and really focus on building a plan for Pennsylvania. We did this through stakeholder engagement. We had over 200 listening sessions all across PA, thanks to the help of our 52 area agencies on aging. We had over 20,000 points of engagement back to the department that we used to really craft with our steering committee, the long-term care council here, a plan that really reflects the needs of older adults that will evolve over the next decade. This is a living document. It sits at the center of the table. It doesn't sit on a shelf. It's going to evolve, it's going to adapt, and it's going to grow.
And so what does it deal with specifically?
So what it is it's 167 tactics that obviously we don't have the time to get through it today. But it really focuses on five key priorities: unlocking access, which is equitable and available affordable opportunities. you know, that we, you know, I heard a little bit on the show earlier today. Mm-hmm. We talked about housing. Housing was a big housing and affordable housing and all things related to housing was a big part of what we heard from older adults. We're talking about aging in communities, removing barriers that prevent older adults from remaining in their homes, making sure they have home and community-based services, access to things like home-delivered meals, senior centers, and activities that keep them engaged, gateways to independence, better mobility and transportation systems for older adults so they can get to where they need to, get to those appointments, and can overcome those barriers to make sure they're living and thriving in our communities. Caregiver support. You know, when you think about the 22 million unpaid caregivers in Pennsylvania right now providing care in every one of our families, our homes, our communities, making sure they have the resources they need. In fact, caregiver support was our first big win for Aging Our Way PA when we produced our Pennsylvania Caregiver Toolkit, our Pennsylvania Care Kit, our Pennsylvania Caregiver Toolkit. And last is education and navigation, coordinating a network of community partners. Older adults told us it's hard to navigate the older adult system. They want help. They want us to make sure that they can get to what they need to easily and that provide safe information.
Yeah, I think, Jason, one of the big questions is how government can do those things. So those are really big, lofty goals. Mm-hmm. But the question is, like, what are actionable things that government can do? Now, I'm happy to pick some stuff from the list, but I would want to hear from you first. Like, if you could give us a concrete example of something that could be done by the state or local government that could help society embrace this demographic shift?
Well, I'll start with, you know, there's countless ways we're doing that. And really, all solutions are local for the most part. And working and empowering local communities to make those solutions a reality is really one of the key elements of Aging Our Way PA. We're doing that in several areas. But like I said earlier, our PA Care Kit is a huge win for caregivers across Pennsylvania. It's been nationally recognized as a win for caregivers. What the PA Care Kit is an online resource that's able to be translated into almost any language. It helps anybody in their caregiving journey, regardless of where they're at, whether it's at the beginning, the middle, the end. And it provides them with resources and supports and connections to really help them as they're caregiving for their loved one, or if they're a professional caregiver, getting connected to employment opportunities or training. It's comprehensive. It was done with stakeholder partners like the PA Home Care Association, the Alzheimer's Association, AARP, and the Jewish Healthcare Foundation. And it's really impacted the lives of hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians since its launch. Mm-hmm. In spring.
Can I just ask you about a specific one, though, Jason?
Yeah.
This is just one I'm picking up that I thought was interesting. One of the recommendations was advocate for legislation that requires higher density options such as accessory dwelling units or elder cottage housing opportunities to be considered in local zoning and planning regulations. So what are those? Like, what's an accessory dwelling unit? What's an elder cottage housing opportunity? And how could, like, local zoning laws change to accommodate them?
Well, you know, I don't want anyone to think that we planted this question. And so in my former life, when I was an area agency on aging director, we promoted elder cottage housing opportunities as a part of a state initiative, a grant that we received from the Department of Aging to build these accessory dwellings. What an echo unit is, an elder cottage housing opportunity, is a small dwelling that is placed on your property. And, you know, those units.
Is that like an in-law suite?
It is. It's exactly like an in-law suite. And they're placed on your property, and they're hooked into your utilities for the most part, and they're movable. Mm. So when older adult that's living in it is finished, we take that resource and move it to the next older adult that needs it. We did ours, and this, you know, there's 52 area agencies on aging, and there's a lot of different models, but our model was in cooperation with one, our local technical college that helped us build and design it, to a local company that helped us get it placed, you know, Simplex Home.
But are those, like, illegal in some places to build? Like, what's the sort of policy fix here?
You think building something and you think designing something and getting it placed would be the hard part, but the hard part to the whole process was the zoning laws. We had a big learning curve to go into local communities and advocate and say, hey, this is something that this family needs so that their loved one can be by them, but still have a sense of independence and still, you know, have a quality of life. And it was a hard fight in some of those cases. We won every one, but it was not easy to be done. And there's still a lot of difficult conversations in zoning about about this and about making sure that there are good alternatives. We're still having the conversation in Philadelphia about some of the other programs that you do, like our SHARE program. SHARE housing opportunity is basically an individual opening up their home to share with an older adult. Mm-hmm. Not as like a rental, but more as an agreement that two people are going to cohabitate together and be able to support each other. Mm-hmm. So that program, we're still working through some of the regulations, some of the challenges in Philadelphia itself to make sure that program becomes reality. We're working with our Area Agency on Aging, the Philadelphia Corporation on Aging, legal team and our legal team to advocate for the changes necessary to bring that program.
And Jason, as we get ready to wrap up with you, I just want to just say, I know that we talked about housing a little bit. We talked about caregivers, but this is a 10-year plan. So what's the next big phase? If you were to just boil it down to the next big phase, the next big focus on the agenda, because I know there's a lot of things. What's the next big thing on the list?
You're right. The list is endless, but our next focus is navigation, redesigning the Pennsylvania Link. That's our Aging and Disability Resource Center. And that really is what older adults asked us to do, build them a better system of navigation. So we had one. It hadn't been invested in a number of years, and we've retooled it. We're in the process of rebuilding it and redesigning it so it meets today's needs and it makes sure it's modernized. Using technology, using everything that we have at our disposal to make sure it's more responsive to the navigation of older adults. So that's the next big ticket item we're trying to check off. And there's a whole myriad of smaller items that happen every year in between, too, that if we had more time, I can get into. But mm-hmm. I know we're limited here.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That's Jason Kavulich, Pennsylvania Secretary of Aging. Appreciate your time today on Studio 2.
Yeah.
Thanks. For having me.
And now let's bring back in Liz Siegert, independent health journalist, to continue this conversation. So Liz, you heard a little bit there about Jason Kavulich, Pennsylvania Secretary of Aging, had to say. I'm curious for your thoughts on what government can and can't do to try to encourage this broader shift in infrastructure, in housing, in transit.
Well, I think government has a large role to play in encouraging builders, in encouraging employers, encouraging health systems to become more age-friendly. Philadelphia happens to be designated as an age-friendly city, which means that it does offer transportation, it's walkable, it's got good healthcare services. But there's a lot more that can be done. For example, is the nearest emergency room what is called an age-friendly healthcare system? So in other words, there are specially trained nurses or doctors that know how to deal with older patients because a lot of times their symptoms might present a little bit differently. There are age-friendly universities going on, including Drexel in Philly, that offer unique classes and accommodations just for older returning students, whether they want to get a new degree or whether they just want to audit some classes because they're interested in whatever the topic is. Importantly, I think government has to take a lead in things like making transportation more accessible. If you live in the suburbs, for example, buses may not run very often, and that makes it difficult to get to doctor's appointments. You don't necessarily want to be driving after hours. So are there rideshare programs available?
Yeah.
The housing options, such as the house sharing, which is a little Golden Girls-esque, is actually a very good mm-hmm. opportunity for people to not be so socially isolated. We haven't really talked about that, but having community-based programs that bring older people together can really do a lot for helping not only their longevity, but their mental health.
Yeah, and I wondered about that because the way people had been dealing with seniors in the past was you get to a certain age and people sort of would either move in with their children or into assisted living, but there's a new argument for multi-generational housing And because a lot of people don't live close to kids anymore, right? Their kids live in other cities and things like that. So what does multi-generational housing look like if a city like Philadelphia were to try to plan something where folks are sort of integrated into to housing and it's just part of the community?
I think it's an awesome idea. Studies have shown that intergenerational housing benefits both ends of the spectrum. In other nations, I think we can take a tip from countries like Sweden, where they will actually pair up college students with older adults, and they both benefit. The college student gets a break on rent and helps around the house, for example, maybe doing yard work or driving the older person to doctor's appointments. The older person has a companion, maybe even some help, not to stereotype them, but perhaps some help with some technical stuff, and has somebody there to rely on should something happen, you know, from a health standpoint.
Yeah. David Began on YouTube says, let's promote a mixed age housing instead of age segregated development. So David's on top of that. And she said what 1101 on YouTube said, here's a good start. Younger generation, stop pushing the overqualified people out of the workforce. Have dialogue between the generations and not just dismiss them with, okay, comma, boomer.
On the other side of the coin, we have this comment from Kevin who says, I think the very premise of this question represents the core problem with our approach. It's all about the seniors, but how about reimagining society for the future? Young people are paying more and more just to get by, and the social programs seniors rely on will not exist in 30 years for the people currently funding them. What about reimagining society for them? What's going to be left once the boomers are all gone? I do think there's a sense, Liz, that the people are the generations are fighting over slices
of the
pie here. And that, you know, for instance, programs that allow older people to stay in their homes drives up the cost of housing for everybody else. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that dynamic and how you go about solving some of these problems we've been talking about without, you know, capping the opportunities of younger people.
Well, it is a conundrum, but I can tell you that it costs a fraction for older adults to stay in their own homes compared to moving into, for example, assisted living and certainly nursing homes, which can run roughly $100,000 a year. Medicaid pays for close to 7 out of 10 nursing home residents. So the society, whether it's state or federal, is bearing the brunt of those costs if people move into nursing homes. Providing home care and community-based services costs literally a fraction of that, and everybody benefits. Seniors are more independent, which means they have lower health costs overall, and it's a way to get some intergenerational activity going on. If you want to talk about segregated, I mean, that's what a nursing home really is.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today on the program, Liz Seeger, independent health journalist. Really appreciate your insights on all things aging and demographics on Studio 2.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And on the other side of this break, we're going to bring in another journalist, the senior health correspondent at Time Magazine, who can talk about different approaches to not just supporting seniors, but capitalizing on this silver generation. We still want to hear from you this hour.
Absolutely.
Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. Rochelle Renee 3265 on YouTube says, my mother recently relocated to take care of her parents, and she's being paid by the state of Pennsylvania to care for them. I wish other states did this because it helps the family care for aging family.
Yes, got to keep families together. By the way, if you were wondering what the question of the day is, it's how should we reimagine society for seniors? The number 888-477-9499. The email studio2@whyy.org. We'll see you on the other side of this break. And Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, before we get back to our main conversation today, we want to shout out our upcoming Studio 2 On the Road event. As a tribute to the 250th anniversary of America, we've been doing a series of events in old taverns across the region.
The next one coming up is next Wednesday evening at Brittenham's in Lafayette Hill, a facility that was established in 1743. Avi and I will be talking with a pair of experts about the French influence on the American Revolution.
As a wise woman once said, the event will also include a round of revolutionary trivia, as well as live comedic improv. Plus, this is big, attendees will get a beer or wine on us.
Yes, so get a sip. And you can join us for the event on January 28th at 7 p.m. It is free, but space is limited, so you'll need to register at whyy.org/events.
Now back to our big question this hour. How should we be reimagining society for seniors? 888-477-9499 is the number. The email is studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
Yes, and before the break, we talked about the new age of aging and what it's like for the growing number of Americans over 65. And we spoke with our Secretary of Aging about how Pennsylvania is adapting to those changing demographics.
Now we'd like to bring in a new voice in the conversation. Alice Park is the senior health correspondent at Time, which recently published its longevity issue. Alice wrote about how policymakers cannot just support seniors, but capitalize on this growing segment of society. Alice Park, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
And so I know that this is sort of an issue that is happening across the world and sort of society sort of thinking about how to redesign themselves to deal with older populations. I want to sort of like, if you just take your favorite example of a city or a community that has done this redesign successfully, which one would that be?
Well, I want to just start out by really perhaps reiterating, I know points that, you know, you've been talking over this past hour, but it bears repeating that really, I think a lot of countries are still struggling to accept the fact that the world's population is living longer. And you know, the World Health Organization estimates that by 2050, 22% of the world's population will be over 60. That's nearly double what it was in 2015 and what it is, you know, around what it is today. So don't get me wrong. That's a good thing. It's all a good thing. And as we heard, you know, from your previous guests, people are not just living longer, but they're living healthier. So they've got added years. And the problem is that our society, much of our fundamental social institutions, if you think about education, employment, even our housing infrastructure, transportation, which we heard about, these were all built at a time when people didn't live beyond their 60s or 70s. So now that people are living one, two, even three decades longer, it's really time for policymakers to understand that changes need to be made. And, you know, I think education is a good example, right? Because right now our system basically front loads all of that. We're done with our education by the time we're in our 20s. If we do higher education, maybe our 30s. And then we spend the rest of our lives working. But if we reimagine what that could look like in a society where people are living to their 90s or 100s, why not have people come in and out of education? You know, come in, they don't have to necessarily get degrees, but pursue something that's of interest to them throughout their lifetimes. And they won't have to stick with one sort of major, as we call them. Mm-hmm. And this spills over into employment as well. You know, why stick with one job, one career? Let's rethink that and be a little more creative. And maybe people could, you know, have several careers throughout their lifetime if we're going to be living longer and we're going to be living healthier.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Some of the most interesting people I've met have had multiple careers and have gone back to school in their 60s to retool. And so I wonder if we start with education, is there an example of a community or a school that has done it in a way that you think sort of reimagines what aging means?
Well, several universities, several universities are really addressing this, as you say. But one of my favorite is in the story, and that's at Arizona State, where they have a senior living facility on the campus of the university. It's called Mirabella. And rather than just paying lip service and saying, oh, yes, we've got seniors on campus, you can drop in, take a few classes here and there. It's actually a very intentional integrated program where the seniors are part of campus life. So that means they're doing everything from being teaching assistants. Obviously, they've got the ability to take whatever classes they want to take. But they're also very much encouraged to engage with the students and be a part of the community. And one of my favorite examples, I spoke to a retired physician who lives at Mirabella. And what he did was he got together with about like 9 or 10 other physicians in the facility, and they created like a sort of, you know, pre-med club, and they meet with pre-med students at the university regularly to talk about issues that these students wouldn't necessarily get educated about in the classroom. Things like work-life balance, you know, how do you deal with burnout? And they can provide real life experience, which is very, very valuable and which isn't necessarily part of curriculums right now.
I want to read this comment from Judy Bennett, 1972 on YouTube, who says, I went to tons of interviews and finally realized they didn't want to hire someone close to retirement age. They would steer the convo to try to show I was not tech savvy or the like. So some of this comes down to the attitudes of employers. And I want to, I guess, look at it through the lens of an employer who's thinking, not that someone who's older can't do the job anymore, but look, I've got to make way for the next generation of talent. I've got to get 20-somethings and 30-somethings in the door, because these folks might work for me for the next 20 or 30 years. How do you make the case to that hirer, that CEO, that indeed they're leaving something on the table by nudging people out of the workforce or not hiring people like Judy?
I think the assumption there that you need to sort of phase out older workers in order to make room for younger ones is part of that old system of thinking, right? Of part of that system of thinking that people have a limited finite number of years for which they're quote unquote productive and able to, you know, work for a company and help that company be productive. And then they're done. That thinking needs to change. And I think we need to appreciate what some social scientists are calling the value of human capital. And that is the experience, the know-how and the maturity that workers who've done something for many years, decades even, can bring to the table. It requires accepting that and accepting that as valuable, which we don't currently in our society. So, you know, an example here is something that they're doing in some of the major companies in Japan, which is they're allowing older workers to continue coming in. They're paying them a salary, perhaps not the full-time salary, but they're giving them a living wage. And they continue to come in. They're actually called window watchers, because some of the time they come into work, they're sitting by the window, kind of talking to their other older colleagues and sometimes reading the newspaper. But you have to rethink that and put yourself in a different mindset. What kind of message does it send? First of all, to older workers, it sends the message that we value you and that you're still useful and can provide help and experience to other workers, which is often the case. These workers are often called upon to, you know, explain and help resolve problems. Number two, you're sending a message to the younger workers as well, which is that your entire lifespan here at the company is valued. So we won't be abandoning you, you know, once your quote unquote productive years are done. So I think it's that kind of reframing of how we think about employment that's going to be important as we continue, you know, to face this trend of having a much older population in coming decades.
And I also wonder if we're getting, and in Pennsylvania, we'll have a third of our population in just a few years be over 60. If you want to continue productivity, how can, you know, folks sort of provide on-ramps for people to maybe not work full time, but, you know, work a half time or even volunteer? Because there's a lot of needs, I think, for people who can do certain things, and there's space for people who are in, you know, above 60 or retirement age to actually provide those services and be very productive.
Absolutely. And this requires really having policies in place that allow for training. You know, Avi, you mentioned the viewer who wrote in about technical skills. So, you know, there should be programs in place for training for older people who want to, you know, get trained and get up to speed on some of the latest skills that they might need for jobs that they're interested in. It also involves, I think, having an infrastructure where you've got a system and a network where seniors can volunteer depending on their interests. There is something called the Experience Corps that's now run by the AARP, and it was started by an epidemiologist, social scientist at Columbia. And the whole idea here was to match older people who were retired to schools that needed help with teachers' assistance. And we know that teachers can use all the help they can get. So I think we need more of these kinds of networks and infrastructure where it's easier for seniors and for those who need services of seniors. It could be childcare. It could be, you know, transportation. It could be any number of things for which, you know, there could be a better match with people who can provide those services and the people who need them.
A couple comments here that kind of go together. Heather from Bristol says, I believe seniors in my community and in my family have a hard time finding activities and events where they can engage in multi-generational interactions and nurture new friendships with people outside their immediate peer group. It seems like some Nordic countries have figured out how to create public programs that manage this. That's Heather's thought. Heidi says, I would like to see senior centers institute programs that today's elders would actually be interested in attending. The senior center near me seems to be all bingo and crochet circles. Mm. I'm not interested. I'm curious for your takes on those two comments, Alice. Is that a problem? Is there sort of a almost like a marketing problem or a programmatic focus that needs to shift when we talk about the volunteer and recreational opportunities that we tend to offer older people?
And I think it all stems back to, right, our traditional way of thinking of older people post-retirement. Is, you know, what do we do with them? And what do we do with them? We tend to put them into senior centers. We tend to silo them off from the rest of society, assuming that, okay, well, they're just going to sort of live and stay there. And, you know, we've got to focus on making sure that the quote unquote productive members of society are, you know, have the resources that they need. That kind of thinking is very antiquated at this point, as your viewer points out. And what we really need to do is to think about better matching what seniors need and what the rest of society needs. And that's not necessarily a hard thing to do. It just requires a mind shift. So an example of this are multi-generational housing facilities, which they have in countries in Europe. You mentioned the Scandinavian countries. Germany is another one where the government is really making a concerted effort to encourage these. And you are encouraging people of different ages, different generations to live together so that naturally what you have are people, younger families with young kids who need childcare services. Older people can perhaps step in and do that. Older people perhaps need help going to doctor's appointments or to activities. Younger community members can help with that. There's an example of this at a facility called One Flushing, in which has made a concerted effort to include people of all ages in the housing unit. And what you see there are activities where older seniors can learn, for example, a second language from younger people. They get help for their immigration paperwork if that's what they want. So, you know, to your point of saying that, yes, we need to better understand what people of different ages need and how we can better meet those needs.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today on the program. That was Alice Park, senior health correspondent for Time. Alice, thanks again.
Thank you.
Yes.
MJ writes in and says we should be encouraging immigrant workers to support the aging population. Janice says we should help nurses borrow as much as they need to complete their education instead of imposing limits as proposed by the Trump administration. And Linda says, I'm so happy you're covering this subject. People of all ages need to have open and honest conversations about the inevitable end of life as well. So few people write their advanced care plan, talk with their families about what they want regarding memorial services and burial. Thank you so much for all those comments this hour. And now it's time to reveal our DJ of the day. Song selection, Al, hit it. I see steep paint, winters bring snow. Kids, come on in before your supper gets cold. Collection plates and daddy's billfold, and that's how it goes. You live long enough, people get old. And of course, that's People Get Old by Lori McKenna from 2018. And you may know McKenna from her work writing for the supergroup The High Women with Brandi Carlile and Amanda Shires. Thank you to Rosie the Realtor for choosing that song and for being our DJ of the day. And apologies to everyone who chose The Beatles' When I'm 64. Wow, I love that song so much. It was introduced to me by my wife, who also goes by Rosie. So it's what a crazy coincidence that is. Our show is produced.
Rosie the Realtor.
I love coincidences.
Uh-huh.
I'm a big fan of coincidences. I'm also a big fan of our producers. Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May. Brian Mike Shipler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. For more great stories about our aging population, check out our newsroom series, Growing Golden, Aging with Purpose, which you can find at WHYY.org. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, stay cozy, stay warm, friends. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. First, no, but you know you won't take the hit.